Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 49 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Today's Monday, July 2nd, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. It looks like an average year for commercial Dungeness crabbing in Southeast. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced last month that crabbers would have a full two-month summer and fall season for most of the region. The season length is based on the first week's catch. Crabbing started June 15th and will be open through mid-August. Adam Messmer, the department's shellfish assistant manager for Southeast, says this summer's crabbing got off to a better start than last year.
Yeah, the first week catch this year was pretty much right at 600,000 pounds. That last year's catch was at about 480, which is, you know, quite a bit more than last year. We're projecting 3.7 million caught for the entire season. Last year's projection was 2.6. So we are up a bit from last year.
If that projection pans out, this year's catch will be just above the 20-year average of 3.6 million pounds. Fishing effort is close to average as well. 127 permit holders were out in the first week. That's up from the 114 permits fished in the first week last year and just above the 20-year average. Messmer calls the distribution of the crab catch strange in the early season.
There are some areas that are big producers that, you know, started off really slow. Some of the northern areas are still pretty slow. Districts 8 and 6 produced quite a bit of crab. But I've been hearing from fishermen that, you know, the fishing is slowly picking up. You know, crab are coming out of the mud still. You know, the first week they weren't catching a lot of soft shell or females or juveniles, and now their catch is kind of picking up. So that's encouraging.
The Dungeness crab price started out strong this season, averaging $2.50 a pound, up more than 25 cents a pound from last year's starting price. While some people think of sea otters as adorable tourist attractions, others see them as predators in fierce competition for valuable shellfish like abalone, Dungeness, and geoduck. Marine mammal biologist Dr. Heidi Pearson is interested in learning more about how sea otter feeding habits may be changing the ecology of Sitka Sound. Pearson is a newly appointed assistant professor of marine biology at the University of Alaska Southeast, Juneau. Pearson believes that by feeding on sea urchins, otters stabilize the kelp forests. Without otters to keep them in check, urchins act like spiny lumberjacks by gnawing through the stalks that connect kelp to the seafloor. So Pearson suspects that the kelp forests in Sitka Sound are in good shape in part because of sea otters.
The kelp forests could be healthier because the sea otters are here and keeping that sea urchin grazing pressure low. Mm-hmm. Kelp forests, of course, in turn provides habitat for other species such as some fish.
Sea otters have an interesting history in Alaska. Starting in the 1700s, the Russians hunted them for their pelts. By 1911, there were no more sea otters left in Southeast Alaska, with the closest remnant population in Prince William Sound. In the 1960s, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game reintroduced them in six locations around the panhandle. Nearest to Sitka was a release of 48 sea otters at Bjorka Island in 1968. Since then, their populations have expanded from those six locations. They now occupy the entire coast of Southeast, as well as parts of Frederick Sound, Icy Strait, and Glacier Bay. As far as Pearson knows, there has been no formal research on the impact sea otters are having on other species in Sitka Sound. This summer, the first step will be mapping the habitat where sea otters are feeding. Pearson will be working with Sitka-based University of Alaska Southeast marine mammal researcher Jan Straley. Also on the project is graduate student Kirsten Barlow. Barlow is a fourth-year marine biology major at the University of Alaska Southeast. She'll be conducting the research out of Straley's university laboratory at the Sitka Sound Science Center, observing otter populations and mapping kelp. Barlow is looking forward to the field research experience.
Any opportunity I have to get involved with marine mammals, I jump on.
Meanwhile, Pearson has plans to continue mapping habitat in otter-free areas like Juneau.
if we can characterize the habitat in an area where there aren't sea otters now, and then the sea otters move in, we would have a great kind of before and after natural experiment.
Knowing the kind of habitat otters prefer in Sitka Sound and how much of it is available around Juneau might help Pearson and Straley predict where otters are likely to show up next. The result of this research could have important implications for the whole ecosystem, including even tourists. Marine debris is nothing new, and a NOAA crew found little of note in last week's survey of outside Panhandle beaches. Beginning in Ketchikan, five scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration hit 36 sites looking for debris from the March 2011 tsunami that hit Japan. They mostly found common stuff, including a lot of styrofoam, but large oval black, yellow, and orange buoys turned up on 26 of 36 beaches.
They were pretty ubiquitous throughout our survey area.
Lead scientist Masek Jaselko describes them as molded hard plastic with rings on either side. Some had English, some Japanese writing. Jeep Rice of NOAA's Okbay Lab says they're not fishing gear and likely part of the Japanese fish farming industry.
Some of the aquaculture farms with lots of nets and oysters and other things attached were swept up in the tsunami, and these would be the buoys that, you know, survived, so to speak.
Rice says the buoys were about 2 feet in diameter and 3.5 to 4 feet tall and could support a lot of weight.
These would be flying really high in the water, so to speak, so they're going to be easily taken by the wind and pushed by the wind further than, say, the water currents would take them. So when there's a conflict of a current versus air or current versus wind, these are going to be taken by the wind.
The scientists also found a number of 5-gallon jugs that appear to contain some type of waste oil. Some were empty, others broken up. Some still had liquid contents. With no labels for a clue, Rice says the NOAA lab is trying to figure out what the substance is.
One of them looks kind of soapy-like. I don't know if that's maybe kitchen grease and soap or oil, or did it come out of a transmission, or we don't know.
While some notable things have washed up in the Pacific Northwest from the Japanese tsunami, such as a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, a dock, and the so-called ghost ship sunk in April by the Coast Guard, Maselko says most of the stuff the NOAA scientists cataloged may have been dumped in the ocean or found its way there years ago.
We don't know. Even finding a ball with a name on it, you know, you never know if somebody just didn't lose it playing beach volleyball in years past. That's where the tough part of the proof comes in.
The scientists will next survey beaches in the Yakutat area. Maselko says he intends to canvass as much of the Gulf of Alaska shoreline as possible this summer, looking for tsunami debris. Wrangell residents planted fruit trees on Saturday as part of a sustainable food and health awareness effort. The orchard, provided by two nationwide groups, will go next to the town's Evergreen Elementary School. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has more.
28 trees plus some berry bushes will be planted. Community members have been coordinating with a Pennsylvania nonprofit group and a Washington State nursery. Chris Reed is part of the fruit tree project. She works for the Wrangell Medical Center.
The Fruit Tree Planting Foundation has worked with Rain Tree Nurseries, which is a place that many of the folks in Southeast do get their trees and ornamentals and things from, and they're accustomed to working with Southeast and know kind of what grows here well and what people have had success with.
The effort is being funded by the Dreyer's Fruit Bars Communities Take Root program. Towns are selected by an online voting system that includes information about each project.
Anyone can read these stories and really support the organizations that they feel is, you know, is close to their heart.
Program spokeswoman Melissa Marasco says Wrangell's description was persuasive. It included some statistics and the fact that fruits and vegetables arrive by weekly barge.
You know, only 25% of their residents receive adequate amounts of fruits and vegetables, and that's a story that must have resonated with, you know, people, of course, within Wrangell, but also elsewhere throughout the country and throughout the world.
The program has an educational component. Reed of the Medical Center says children used to getting fruit from a store will learn more about where it comes from and how it's grown. She says the orchard is also part of a larger community health effort.
From the medical perspective, you know, things such as diabetes and obesity are problems in Alaska, well, nationwide. And it provides an opportunity to open some of those discussions, not only with the kids, but with the community in general, in terms of, you know, what choices can we make in our lives that are going to help us to be healthier, happier people.
The orchard will include apple, plum, and cherry trees. Reed says once they mature, anyone from town will be able to pick fresh fruit. This is Ed Schoenfeld.
Public tips are being sought in connection with the vandalism of trees at Juneau's Thunder Mountain High School. Police were notified that newly planted trees at the school were run over by a vehicle. The damage reported in late May is estimated at about $1,000. Anyone with information about the vandalism is urged to report it through the Juneau Crime Line. Seismologists say a minor earthquake was felt in the Alaska community of Cooper Landing over the weekend. The Alaska Earthquake Information Center says the 3.2 magnitude quake occurred at 10:20 a.m. on Sunday. The quake was centered 21 miles northeast of Cooper Landing. The Earthquake Information Center says there are no immediate reports of damage. A Minnesota hospital executive has been named as the next chief executive officer for Bartlett Regional Hospital in Juneau. Bartlett's board of directors has selected Christine Harf as the new administrator. Harf, who is expected to assume the position in August, currently is CEO of Sanford Medical Center in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. Harf was chosen for the Juneau job over Elizabeth Woodyard, CEO of Petersburg Medical Center in Southeast Alaska. A third finalist, William Comer, withdrew from consideration for personal reasons. That's going to do it for news for this hour. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for rain, likely mainly this morning. Highs around 56 with light winds. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 47, northwest winds 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs around 58, northwest winds at 10 miles per hour. Currently overcast and 49 degrees at the Rocky Gutierrez Airport. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.